that something sinister, you said. Not the man you'd known and admired for years, you frankly stated. And if I'm to help you, you must continue to be so frank with me and with Dr. Watson.
Very well.
You were aware of the change in the professor as soon as he returned?
From the very hour he returned. He threw himself back into his work with, if anything, more vigour, more brilliance than before. But, yes, he was altered.
Blood tomorrow, Bennett. I shall announce my return with a dissertation, a very rhapsody on the blood of life. Blood must have its course, lad. And every dog its day.
Yes, sir.
Well, you agree with Mr. Kingsley, then?
Mr. Kingsley?
Mr. Charles Kingsley, the Chartist clergyman who railed against celibacy and wrote much about water. An obsession instilled in him I've always maintained by his cold compulsory baths at school. Put the books down, boy. And find me that portfolio of vascular diagrams.
Right, sir.
We may agree with Kingsley, Bennett, who said also that we must do noble things, not dream them. But we can no longer agree with Harvey in his explication of the blood. Or rather, we now see more deeply, more clearly into the complexity and versatility of that. It's not up there, boy. Certainly not up there.
It's a purple folder, isn't it?
Yes, tied with yellow cord. We must take a morning soon to reorganize this place. We've allowed too much clutter to accumulate. Ah, oh, but it's good to be back. You know, surprisingly good. And my first lecture tomorrow will be a declaration of intent on my part. My intent to do more than simplify difficult matters for inferior, immature minds. My intent to do new work, bold work.
The air of a company in Prague must be supremely invigorating, sir.
Prague?
Yes, I had a letter from a fellow student there. He mentioned in passing that he...
Give you a full account of my work there, did he, this student fellow?
No. No, he merely saw you across the street.
Well, no matter. Find that portfolio.
Yes, sir.
Oh, such a genius the man was. William Harvey. Here it is. De mutu cordis on the motion of the heart and blood in animals, 1628. A new age began then, Bennett. Perhaps a new age is beginning now. Our knowledge of the constituents and functions of the blood. Leave that alone!
Sir?
Leave it be, you meddling young fool! Bring it here! 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 Give it to me. This box, Bennett, this box you so carelessly handle.
Sir, I merely lifted
it. It contains only personal material, private material. It is no concern of yours.
I understand, sir. I was only moving it out of my way.
And there are other things that are not your concern.
Well, of course, sir, I wouldn't...
You are not my son, and you are not yet even my son-in-law. You will agree I am entitled to some privacy, let us not say secret, some proper privacy from a mere secretary and assistant, however much confidence I have in him.
Of course.
And I do have confidence in you, Bennett. I am confident you will respect my wishes, carry out my instructions. As to certain correspondence I expect from London...
Correspondence?
Letters, Bennett. Letters and packages of a strictly private nature from London, which will be marked beneath the stamp with a cross. You understand?
A cross beneath the stamp?
Just so. Letters and packages so marked are not to be opened by you. If you value your place here and your happy position with my daughter.
And correspondence so marked did arrive?
Yes, there have been several such deliveries.
And you obeyed the professor's command? You've no idea of their contents?
None. They come from London. They were addressed in a rather illiterate handwriting. Beyond that, I know nothing.
Yes, and the box you so angered him by touching?
Mr. Holmes, the new development I mentioned, the incident the night before last...
Yes, I've been wondering about that. All in good time, Mr. Bennett. All in good order. Huh? That's the proper method. My method. Huh. The box.
I can tell you little about it. Wooden... quaintly carved. I think he must have brought it back from Prague.
Its contents, too, are a mystery to you.
Yes. All I know is he keeps the key to it on his watch chain.
When did the incident you just described take place?
Early in July. In fact, I can tell you the exact date. I have it here. The 2nd. And it was on that date, too, that Roy first attacked the professor. On July the 11th, there was a similar scene which Edith witnessed. Again on July the 20th. Then we had to banish the dog to the stables.
Admirable.
But he had been such an affectionate animal.
I mean, you're an admirable witness. It seems you do appreciate my method.
I learned method, Mr. Holmes, from my great teacher, Professor Presbury.
Now, Miss Edith Presbury.
Edith?
The professor's daughter, your fiancée. Did she, too, note the disturbing change in her father's character?
Well, yes, she did, of course, but I don't see the relevance of that. She knows even less than I do about the marked letters.
There's more to this than marked letters, Mr. Bennet. And you've agreed, have you not, to be utterly frank with me?
Yes, I have.
Because we have to violate a deeper privacy than the professor's correspondence.
I don't understand.
It is understanding we seek, is it not? Now, tell me what your fiancée has confided in you about her father's altered behaviour.
The day he came home from Prague, the first time she saw him on his return.
Come on now, Roy. Good boy. We'll keep each other's spirits up. We'll have a run in the meadow. Let the fresh air... Father! Oh, you're home!
So I am, Edith, so I am. And how wonderful it is to see you.
We were so worried. No word from you.
And to see Roy. Good boy, good old boy.
Where have you been?
Both of you look radiant, as the garden does, as home does, everything does.
Father, please. We've been so anxious.
Where I've been is of no matter. Now I'm home. I have nothing to tell you that you need to know, or that would entertain a young lady. But you... You have much to tell me.
Tell you?
Oh, I've been homesick, Edith, very sick and failing indeed. But now I'm well, healthy and well, and eager to be doing. Don't I look well?
Oh, yes, you do, but...
Oh, that chestnut tree is splendid, isn't it? And the lawn positively shines. Alice, how is Alice?
She's well, but of course she too has been at a loss.
At a loss? My Alice? Not for company, I'll wager. No doubt a host of young fools has been buzzing around her like foraging bees. Well, that fatuous swarm will now be dispersed, annihilated. The honey's all mine. Mine. And mine alone.
Pride. That was the word she used. He seemed so proud. Some breakthrough in his work, I assume. New work, he said to me. Bold work.
And yet, according to Edith, he didn't talk about his work.
No. About his Alice.
Gentlemen, I feel I must tell you about the night before last.
Yes, September the 4th. 9.
9 what?
9. A meaningful number, I think.
Holmes, what are you talking about?
Do tell us what happened on this significant date, Mr. Bennet.
It was about 2 in the morning. I was lying awake.
I thought by the look of you, you might have been sleeping badly.
With so much distress, Doctor,
you may consult Dr. Watson about your insomnia later. Please, go on.
I heard a sound in the corridor outside my room. A dull, muffled sound. I got up, opened my door. Mr. Holmes, I believe I'm as strong-nerved as any man, but... The corridor was dark. Only one window... Halfway along, through a patch of light, pale light, on the floor. And into it, something was emerging. Something dark, crouching, and it was he. Crawling. No, creeping, not quite on his hands and knees, more. Good God, more on his hands and feet. His face sunk between his hands, creeping, but with ease, his eyes darting, and I was paralyzed. What's that?
It's only the bell downstairs.
The bell?
The doorbell. A caller.
And who can it be?
Be calm, Mr. Bennet. Mrs. Hudson will discover who.
I'm sorry, Jack.
It's all right.
I knew I'd find you here, and I simply had to see you. After what happened last night, I just couldn't wait for you to return. I couldn't remain another night in that... Mr. Holmes, I do apologise for this intrusion and, for my agitation.
Think nothing of that, Miss Presbury. Any fresh light you may throw on your father's case will be most welcome.
Shall I have Mrs. Hudson bring up some tea?
No, thank you, Dr. Watson. I'm quite recovered.
Do you feel able now to tell us what happened last night?
Go ahead, Edith. We may speak as freely to Dr. Watson as to Mr. Holmes.
Of course you may, of course you may. Do sit down, Miss Presbury. Yes, we'll hear your account of last night's new evidence a little later. First, I'd like to hear more of your impressions of the change in your father since his engagement to Miss Morphy.
Alice.
Miss Alice Morphy, to whom your father became engaged in...
In June.
Within days of that happy but unexpected...
Well, yes, it was rather...
Yes, within days of that happy but unexpected announcement, he disappears to Prague and returns an altered man. Tell us a little more about that.
I don't quite see what you want me to...
I confess neither do I, Mr. Holmes. After what I have told you, and when Edith has experienced something, we
haven't
yet...
Your fiancé will, I'm sure, confirm, Miss Presbury, that complete frankness is essential if we're to unravel this case, and complete trust in my method.
Hmm? Jack? Hmm. Very well. It was early in June. Very fine. Warm, as you'll no doubt remember. That day he was taking tea with the Morphys. Professor Morphy is his closest colleague. And I knew he and Alice were... they shared many interests. My interests are... Anyway, I didn't go with him that day. I often did, but on that afternoon I'd been strangely restless, a slight headache. And the piano and my music is a great comfort to me.
Good afternoon, Edith.
Father, and Alice. How are you, Alice?
I'm well, Edith. We could hear you playing as we came across the garden. Very sweet.
Sweet and sad. When I'm in this headachy mood, I begin with such a piece, then move to something more light and jolly.
And that is restorative.
Restorative? Well, yes. It helps, sometimes.
How curious. But then you are artistic. All I can do in such a condition is lie down in a darkened room after taking one of my father's elixirs.
Is your father well?
Oh, yes. And perhaps imbibing elixirs of a different kind right now.
Imbibing?
In celebration, Edith. And perhaps you will play something more jolly now. Something downright joyful, I'd hope.
Something epithalamial. Is that the word?
It is, it is. Up, fair bride, and call thy stars from out their several boxes. Take thy, diamonds.
Rubies. Rubies, pearls, and diamonds.
Yes, and make thyself a constellation. A marriage song by John Donne.
Oh, I don't care for him. Mother used to read his sermons to me.
Oh, but in his youth, Alice, such lines he could spin. Love all alike no season knows, nor clime, nor hours, days, months, which are the rags of time.
But I summon Ben Jonson to my case, dear George, when it comes to Donne.
George? You called my father...
Miss Morphy, your longtime friend, Alice, and now my Alice, too, has done me the stunning honour of agreeing to be my wife. Now, where's that young Jack of yours?
Jack?
He must share in the celebration, must my fine young Mr. Bennet. In the laboratory, is he?
I think so, yes.
Industrious fellow. Bennet's last task today shall be to bring up a bottle of our finest. And you, my pretty pale daughter, shall play. Play!
You are pale, Edith. And I think in no mood for playing.
No. No, I don't think
this
I can.
Has come as an utter surprise to you.
Well, of course. There's been no hint that such a thing...
I know. We have been very discreet. We allowed no suggestion that matters were developing in this way until we were entirely sure of each other. Today was his third proposal, in fact.
Alice, Thomas Wellwood. You and he, I thought, were...
Young Mr. Wellwood is pleasant company, and I know he has high hopes, indeed high intention of making his career in the bank a sound one. But no more than sound. There are no Newtons or Galileos in the science of money. But your father's work now, and further attainments are ahead for him. You must know that. I'm not speaking of merely material success, Edith. Your father's work of itself is endlessly fascinating to
Alice?
Yes?
I think I must take your advice. This headache is one of the more immovable ones. I'd best go and lie down for a while.
Of course. We'll talk more later.
Excuse me, Alice.
Edith?
I'm sorry, Alice. I do feel rather faint.
Oh, a moment only. You and I have been friends since childhood. I want us still to be friends.
Do you?
Well, of course. And more than that. Let me be frank. When your father and I are married, we will, of course, live here. But you mustn't think of me as your... Oh, but that's too absurd even to say. We should be like sisters, Edith. sisters.
Edith?
Miss Presbrey, are you feeling unwell?
What is it, Edith? Dr. Watson?
There's no need to continue if you don't feel up to it. You've told us enough for the moment.
I must tell you about last night.
Edith, if you're unwell, you mustn't force yourself to say
more. It was Roy that woke me, I think. Certainly he was barking from the stables when I was fully awake. And I know I was. I was awake. I remember thinking, is my door locked? But of course, it always is these days. The moonlight at the window was very bright. I could see quite clearly what was there.
What was there? At the window, you mean?
In the square of light. My father.
What?
My father's face. Pressed against the window pane.
But your room is... it's on the second floor.
One of his hands was raised. As if he'd been about to push the window up. If that window had started to rise, I know I'd have gone mad. There have been times when I thought I am already, but... it was no delusion. He was there. For about 20 seconds or so. And I couldn't move. Even when he vanished, I still couldn't budge. Paralysed. All I could do was lie and shiver until dawn. Then at breakfast, he didn't mention it.
And did you?
No. I made an excuse to come to town. Here I am.
Curious. Most curious.
Curious? It's uncanny.
But last night, so soon, that is curious. Do you have something in mind, Holmes?
Yes. An inn in Cambridge. You, Mr. Bennet, shall return to your duties with as normal a manner as you can pretend while your fiancée remains in London. Your visit can be prolonged, Miss Presbrey.
Yes, easily.
And you and I, Watson, if you can without too much inconvenience uproot yourself from practice and domesticity, you and I shall for the next few days be in the most pleasant surroundings of that ancient and commendable hostel, the Chequers Inn. The linen is above reproach, the port above mediocrity. There now. You agree about the port?
It's very fine.
And now that we're properly refreshed, we're fit to discuss the case. What's your opinion?
Mine? You want my opinion?
Why shouldn't I?
These days, Holmes, I think I have become little more than a habit to you. Like a violin or your old black pipe. Sometimes you condescend to think aloud in my presence, but wouldn't it be as useful to address your pipe or that glass in your hand?
Indeed, no, Watson. My pipe doesn't register what I say, nor does it interject as you do.
Kind of you to say so.
Now, when Bennet found Presbrey creeping along the corridor at night in that strange, stooped position, what do you make of that?
Well, as a medical man, I've known a severe attack of lumbago make a person walk in such a way.
Lumbago?
An affliction that can certainly be trying to the temper.
Let's not be too flat-footed, Watson. Bennet told us that he was able to walk erect again.
I was joking, Holmes.
Ah. And the change in Presbrey's character, his mysterious trip abroad. Have you something suitably facetious to say about those aspects of his case?
No. Speaking in all seriousness as a medical man, I believe it's a case for an alienist. A quite elderly gentleman falls in love, seriously so, with a much younger woman. His cerebral processes are disturbed by the affair. His journey to Prague may be a last and futile attempt to break himself of the passion.
Yeah, something in there. And the secret letters and packages in the locked box.
They may not even be directly connected. Some other private transaction, a loan perhaps, or share certificates.
And the Wolfhound disapproves of this financial dealing. Mm-hmm. No, there's more to it all than this. All connected.
And how do you propose we find out what more there is?
In the morning, we confront Presbrey.
And cajole an explanation from him.
Unlikely, but I'd value a good close look at him. His daughter's told us that he seems to have little or no memory of those times when he's altered. I've thought of a bold and provoking approach to take advantage of that fact.
And are you familiar with Cambridge, Mr. Holmes?
I have been summoned here before.
That would suggest you are here, what's the phrase, on a case?
We are, yes, but we don't yet know quite how time-consuming it might be.
Then I must consume as little of your time as possible. What can I do for you, gentlemen?
What can you do for us?
I'm sorry?
That was the question I was about to put to you.
To me?
Yes. You see, I heard, through an agent of mine, that Professor Presbury of Cambridge had need of my services. There is only one Professor Presbury, I'm sure.
Oh, indeed, there is only one.
And on the 26th of last month, you don't recollect communicating with my agent?
It is not a matter of recollection. At no time have I considered dealing with any detective.
Ah, then my agent must be in error. We can only apologize for troubling you, Professor.
Just a moment, gentlemen. Perhaps my agent can throw some light on the matter. It's not every day a man gets the opportunity to assist a detective of your stature. And your informant, Mr. Holmes, would I know his name?
I doubt it very much. And my business is, in this respect, like the good doctors here. There must be the strictest confidentiality between investigator and client.
Oh, I too put great value on confidentiality. Bennett?
Yes, sir.
These two gentlemen have come from London under the impression that they have been summoned. Do you know them?
Know them, sir?
Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Well, of course I know of them.
Please trouble yourself no more, Professor Presbury.
No trouble, Mr. Holmes. You handle all my correspondence, don't you, Bennett?
Yes, sir.
And have you a note of any kind, of any communication going to Mr. Holmes, or any letter, telegram, any scrap of paper at all to or from any third party concerning this, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing at all, sir.
And perhaps you'd show these misplaced and mistaken gentlemen out and return to me at once.
His nerves are in extreme disorder. You'd best return to him quickly, Mr. Bennett.
I fear you may be in for a rather uncomfortable time.
And still, I hate to tell the man lies.
Let him have his own way as far as you can. Try to cross him as little as possible.
Before you go, which is Miss Presbury's bedroom window?
Second floor, third from the right. And you'd better have this, Mr. Holmes.
What is it?
It's the address of the man in London with whom the professor is secretly communicating.
Well, now.
He wrote to him this morning, and I got it from his blotting paper. I must go, and please, please, clear all this up soon.
Well, the blotting paper, indeed. Yes, that young man has the makings of a detective, Watson. Yes. Dorak. Curious name.
Holmes, look at that window. Miss Presbury.
I have looked. There's a creeper below it and a water pipe above, which gives some foothold. It's Dorak. Slavonic, I assume.
Are you suggesting you could climb to that window?
Dorak, perhaps a Bohemia. Bohemia, Prague. Yes, there's one connection, Watson. But the once faithful dog that so hates him, the ivied wall, no normal man could scale.
Glad you admit that.
His creeping gait.
We didn't learn much from our bold, close inspection, did we?
No, apart from his poorly concealed rage at our intrusion, he gave little away, and his memory is more reliable than his daughter believes.
He struck me as being in possession of a perfectly clear and logical brain, and physically, there was nothing remarkable, portly. Smooth-skinned, his complexion and eyes quite healthy.
Smooth-skinned, apart from the knuckles, of course.
Knuckles?
But always look at the hands first, Watson. Mm. Then cuffs, trouser knees and boots. The professor's knuckles were thick and horny in a way that's quite new.
What is it?
The ivy, the knuckles, the dog and Prague.
Prague?
And Alice. Good God, no. Surely not.
What?
Connections. Horrifying connections. Back to London, Watson. You to seek out this Dorak. I to visit Miss Edith Presbury.
But haven't I told you how I felt about the engagement, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, you have. And I would press you no further if I didn't think it necessary.
And why is it so necessary? Forgive me, but you ask me for a most unusual frankness about matters that are...
Delicate, yes.
Of a personal and family nature, certainly. So may I not ask for an equivalent openness from you?
Quite right. My investigations so far have led me to begin to make certain connections in my mind. Now, where these connections lead will decide how I must approach your father, how I might help him, help all your family. Put it this way. I am being so bold as to ask a lovely and decorous young lady to share with a virtual stranger those secrets young women friends might share.
Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Can you do that, Miss Presbury? Can you do that to save your father?
Save him?
And Alice.
to save them both.
Bravo. Your playing does improve, Edith. And what a complex piece it was.
There's a deeper passion in it I can't quite reach.
What it might express, I can't say. But the sheer skill required. It's a science, too, in a way, isn't it?
Is it?
Mathematics. Each note in its place, like the components of an equation.
I met Thomas Wellwood yesterday.
Oh?
He was passionate.
He can be embarrassingly fervent, that young man.
He seemed torn between grief and anger. He suggested you and he had an understanding.
He misunderstood. And his passion will fade. The bank will soon cure him of such adolescent indulgence.
Oh, but he's such a sweet man, Alice.
Sweet? That kind of shallow winsomeness is not for me.
But my father is.
Most certainly.
You love my father?
I don't object to the word. But there are more precise ones. I respect him, even revere him. I'm honoured that such a brilliant and striving man should want me to be his wife. I know he'll protect me, raise my understanding of the world, and I don't shrink from confessing it, raise my position in the world. I mean the world of learning, of civilisation.
Well, I feel all these things for Jack.
I hope so.
But we expect more.
Then you have high expectations.
Surely it's not overly ambitious to pray for children from our marriage.
I have no such ambition.
Your life together will be one entirely of the intellect, of civilization.
And companionship, of course.
No other fulfilment? You're only a few years older than I.
And I will be your father's faithful wife. We are not French, Edith.
Alice!
That's as delicate as I can be to make sure you understand.
And does he understand? That companionship is the only...
I'm sure he must. Your father, after all, has already lived the kind of fulfilment you're talking about. You are its result, and he is justly proud of you.
I remember his face when he announced your engagement. He looked fervent. His eyes were young.
Please, can we let this subject rest?
Have I given away enough secrets now?
Yes, I think you have.
And your connections?
They become more clear.
In what direction do they lead?
They lead me to Cambridge. You, they compel to stay here. Out of danger.
Holmes, I cannot believe this is happening.
But there it is, Watson.
It's like a nightmare.
But I see it too. We are both awake.
Do we interfere?
Not yet. You have your revolver.
Yes. Do you think...
I think when something as monstrous as this is unleashed, we must be ready for anything.
Now look. He's down. Heading round the side of the house.
Towards the stables. Good.
But the wolfhound is there.
And so should our third man be there.
The speed of him. He moves like...
Yes, Watson, I know what he moves like. Come on now. After him.
Come on, you toothless whelp. Can't reach me, can't touch me.
Of course you can't.
You're the runt and I'm the master. You're in chains and I'm in charge. The master, that's all mine. See, see? Can't reach. Having the strength, having the blood, having the brains. And me all brains and brawn all. Might and main.
Professor Presbury.
Oh, man.
Leave the beast alone.
A man all blood and bone and blah, blah.
Right, put down.
Take care, Mr. Bennett.
Stay back, he knows me. Down, Roy, put down.
You'll sleep for some time now.
The morphia should see to that.
Thank you, Doctor.
And thanks for your help, Mr. Bennett. But he should be seen by a first-class surgeon.
No.
We had him firmly by the throat.
And you've dressed the wound well. I do have a medical degree.
Then you know the teeth pass dangerously close to the carotid artery.
But he'll survive.
Well, yes, I think the danger is past.
Then no more outsiders, please. If his condition gets beyond these walls...
But what is his condition? I still can't quite believe what I saw out there. On the wall.
On the wall?
He was climbing, Mr. Bennett, climbing on the ivy, with the most extraordinary speed and agility, leaping from branch to branch like a... Isn't that so, Holmes? It was like a dream. On that moonlit wall in his dressing gown, he looked like a huge bat. And he seemed to... climb for the sheer joy of it. His agility was... I can't fathom it.
For pleasure? He climbs an ivied wall for pleasure?
That's how it looked. And the other night, when he appeared at the young lady's window, he must have been, well, indulging in this mad pastime.
When mere chance brought him to Edith's window?
Yes. We must assume so. Is that your opinion, Holmes? Holmes?
What?
Mere chance brought him to his daughter's window.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Holmes, what is this? How could he do those things? Is it madness?
Madness. Oh, yes, it's that.
Your interest in the dates, 9 days, you said. Are you thinking of some connection between bouts of insanity and phases of the moon?
Oh, no, no. A drug. A drug administered at regular 9-day intervals. The incident out of sequence, his appearance at the window on the 4th of September. Well, either he'd increased the dose or the effects were growing out of his control. Yes. I incline to the latter theory.
But what drug could bring about such a horrible transformation?
Perhaps we'll find the answer in that precious locked box of his. You said the key's on his watch chain.
Yes.
Yes, and the box in the laboratory.
It was, yes.
Then bring the key and show us the way. As I warned you, we may have to violate his deepest privacy.
Yes, it fits. Not much here.
But enough. You were right, Holmes. A hypodermic syringe.
One empty file, one nearly full. And the letters, you see, with the cross under the stamp.
From our Bohemian friend in London, Dorak. Well, I've already settled him. The police should be interviewing him now.
Oh, he's no more than an errand boy. I'm sure you'll find a more significant name in that other letter.
This one? It's from Prague. Should I read it, Mr. Holmes?
If you can face all the truth.
Well, of course I... Why should I not? I shall read it. From someone named H. Lowenstein.
Lowenstein? I know that name. Oh, my God.
He says... No.
Let me see. Honoured colleague, the treatment enjoined caution. Not without danger. The serum of anthropoid would have been better. Have used black-faced langur. A specimen was accessible.
Langur?
An ape from the Himalayas, is it not? Yes. The most human of climbing monkeys.
He was injecting himself with ape serum?
Lowenstein is already known and condemned by his profession for his ruthless search for the secret of rejuvenescence, for the elixir of life.
His strength, his agility.
New youth, new virility. And, of course, the dog must have sensed the change in him before anyone else. His smell.
Alice... Dear God, Alice!
Holmes, even Lowenstein won't resist you. We'll write to him, yes? Even go there, go to Prague. Confront him with his criminal responsibility for this obscenity.
Yes, yes, we can stop Lowenstein, but others will follow. Others may find a better way. The sensual, the material, the worldly. They'll prolong their worthless lives. There's more of the spirit... will resist the temptation. So who will survive? What sort of cesspool might our world become?
So you think you understand, Mr. Philosopher Holmes?
Professor!
How can you... Professor, you should not be moving.
Be still, Doctor. My elixir is more powerful than any common sawbones can know. More potent than your morphia.
You must go back to bed.
And you... Holmes, you lecture me about when my work should be done, when my life should be over.
I do not lecture, I merely observe with horror.
Horror? The meddling detective, the grubby snoop, is horrified? How can you understand my horror?
that I should wither before my work. My life is fulfilled. How can you understand my need?
Ah! Professor! Let me!
Dear God!
Strange to hear that name from one who'd flout nature's laws.
What? Oh, I'm not down here to pray, Holmes. My legs gave way. They just gave way.
Look at yourself. Listen to yourself. Is this the man of renewed youth who awaited at the altar for Miss Alice Morphy? And don't you think a wife, even one as innocent as she, will sense that you stand there with blood in your veins? That's an affront to nature. Blood that flows from a monstrous experiment that's already brought you like an animal to your daughter's window in the middle of the night. That's aroused disgust and fear in your family, your friends, even your own dog. Watson.
Yes, Holmes.
There's an early train to town. But I think we have time to return to the Chequers first for a refreshing cup of tea.
What's to become of me?
Ah, you have a loyal servant in Mr. Bennet here, and I think still a devoted friend.
Of course.
God bless you, Bennet.
He and your daughter will see you through what will no doubt be a long and painful convalescence, and perhaps, you'll have a wife to guide you with proper discipline to a full recovery. Now, Watson, the Chequers and that tea.
In The Creeping Man, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Robin Ellis as Professor Presbury. Edith Presbury was played by Deborah Berlin, Alice Murphy by Annabel Mullion, and Jack Bennett by Oliver Senton. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Creeping Man was dramatized for radio by Robert Forrest and directed by Patrick Rayner.
Tell me, Inspector, have you noticed anything at all peculiar about the state of this room?
I wouldn't say peculiar, Mr. Holmes. We found 4 cigar stubs in the grate. The deceased appears to have been smoking heavily during the night.
Have you got his cigar holder?
No, sir. No sign of one.
His cigar case, then?
Oh, yes. That was on the dressing table. Here it is.
Quite so. This is no suicide, Inspector. It's a deliberately planned and cold-blooded murder.
The Resident Patient by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Peter Ling. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Robert Lang as Alfred Blessington, Clarence Smith as Dr. Percy Trevelyan, with David Kossoff and George Winter. The Resident Patient.
It had been a close, rainy day in October, unhealthy weather, but the evening brought a breeze with it, and Holmes suggested we should refresh ourselves with a ramble to Hyde Park.
And what have you decided, Watson? Will there ever be home rule for Ireland?
As long as Lord Salisbury remains Prime Minister, it seems to me... I beg your pardon?
Well, surely you are musing upon the problem. And I fancy you concluded that such a complicated issue is unlikely to be solved through party politics.
Yes, those were my thoughts exactly. I didn't realise I'd put them into words.
You did not. Well, we know each other pretty well by now. Wouldn't you agree? Sometimes I may be able to follow your unspoken thoughts.
Good Lord. I hope you're not taking up telepathy as a hobby.
Oh, hardly that. A very unscientific science, I fear.
Very well, then. No doubt you're about to explain to me how the trick was done.
My dear fellow, ever since we left Hyde Park, you've been in a brown study, and your features are the faithful servants of your emotions.
Do you mean to tell me that you were able to read my train of thought in my facial expression?
Your eyes are particularly eloquent. Perhaps you can recall how your reverie began.
Yes, I... No, I can't.
Then I will tell you. A barrel organ struck up an old Irish tune. It evoked some picturesque images. Your head was full of the emerald oil. A moment later, a man walked by carrying a travelling bag.
Ah, you noticed him too.
A Gladstone bag, to be precise. Ireland Gladstone. You were reminded of his unsuccessful attempt to carry through the Home Rule Bill. Then we passed two dogs barking furiously at each other and their wretched owners straining to prevent a life-or-death struggle. And at last, far away in Westminster, Big Ben began to strike the hour. Your mind flew to the Houses of Parliament, and a rueful smile quivered upon your lips. Was there, after all, so very much difference in principle between Gladstone and Salisbury hammering it out across the floor of the House and a commoner garden dogfight?
My dear Holmes, you have followed me quite wonderfully. Although, of course, now you have explained it, it's quite obvious, really.
Certainly, Watson. All very superficial, I assure you. But it's 10 o'clock. High time to turn our steps to Baker Street. Yeah, well, well. It seems we have a visitor.
You mean the brougham? There's no reason to suppose it's waiting for us.
I think you'll find it is. There is a light in the sitting room window. Mrs. Hudson would scarcely have lit the lamp in an empty room. A colleague of yours, perhaps.
What makes you say that?
Oh, look inside. This carriage belongs to a doctor in general practice, not long established, but he's had a good deal of work already.
Of course. The wicker basket. A varied selection of medical instruments. Still reasonably new and shiny.
Well done, Watson. But what brings the good doctor to visit us at such a late hour?
Mr. Holmes?
Good evening, Doctor. Allow me to introduce you to a fellow medico, my friend Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Please, resume your seat and let me know how I can serve you.
Thank you. But firstly, may I ask you how you knew I was a doctor?
My colleague tipped me off. I'm not alone in possessing deductive powers.
Oh, thank you, Holmes.
Proceed with your story, Doctor.
My name is Percy Trevelyan, and I live at 103 Brook Street.
Trevelyan? Forgive me, you're not P.J. Trevelyan, the author of a monograph upon obscure nervous lesions.
Dr. Watson, you overwhelm me. I so seldom hear of the work, I thought it was dead and buried. My publishers give me a most discouraging account of its sale. But perhaps you are a specialist in that field.
Oh, good Lord, no. I'm a retired army surgeon.
Splendid. Nervous diseases have always been my particular hobby horse. I hope to specialise myself one day. But, well, at first a man has to take whatever offers. I beg your pardon, Mr. Holmes. I know how valuable your time must be. The fact is, a singular turn of events has occurred in Brook Street, and tonight matters came to such a head that, well, I decided to come and ask for your advice and assistance.
You are very welcome to both. Can you describe these events which have been troubling you?
To begin with, I must tell you something of my own circumstances. I was a London University man. I hope I'm not being immodest when I say that my student career was considered to be quite outstanding. There was a general impression that a promising and golden future lay before me. But there was one great stumbling block.
Your future was more promising than golden, perhaps.
You've hit it exactly, Mr. Holmes. My want of capital.
Ah.
A doctor who aims high is compelled to start in one of a dozen streets in the Cavendish Square quarter, which entails enormous rents and furnishing expenses, all of them quite beyond my meagre capacities. But suddenly, an unexpected incident opened up new possibilities. I had a visit from a gentleman by the name of Alfred Blessington, a complete stranger to me. He came to my lodgings and plunged straight down to business.
Mr. Trevelyan? Percy Trevelyan?
Why, yes. I don't think I've had the pleasure...
The same Percy Trevelyan who had such a distinguished career in research and won the Pinkerton Prize for his studies on nervous lesions?
It's very good of you to say so.
Answer me frankly, young man. You'll find it's in your own interest. You have the brains to take you to the top of the tree, but have you got the tact and diplomacy to keep you there?
I sincerely hope so. They say practice makes perfect, don't they?
Ah, but you don't have a practice, do you? So, what's holding you back?
Oh, various reasons. I don't think it's advisable to rush things. I prefer to take my time.
Poppycock. Come now. Cards on the table, young man. It's the old story, isn't it? More in your brains than in your bank balance, eh? But what would you say if I were to set you up in Brook Street?
You mean a practice of my own?
Why not? It's just like any other business speculation. And safer than most.
I don't quite follow you. What would I have to do?
I'll tell you. I've taken a house already. I'll furnish it, pay the staff, and run the whole place. All you have to do is wear out the chair in your consulting room and hand over 3/4 of whatever you earn from your patients. You can keep the other quarter as pocket money. And pretty handsome too, eh?
Oh, we bargained and negotiated. I won't weary you with the details, Mr. Holmes, but by Lady Day I'd moved in, pretty well on the terms he'd suggested. He continued to live in the house, upstairs in his own apartment. He has a weak heart and needs constant medical supervision.
Mm-hmm. You seem to be a very fortunate young man. A West End practice and a resident patient.
So I thought. However, since then, Mr. Blessington has begun to behave in a very eccentric way.
Yes, I'm finding it rather hard to picture your Mr. Blessington. What sort of man is he?
Physically, he's a very fat man, though it's apparent that at some time he's been even fatter, for the skin hangs about his face in loose pouches, like the jowls of a bloodhound.
And this eccentricity you speak of?
He's a man of singular habits, almost a recluse. He shuns company and hardly leaves the house, except to take a short constitutional each evening. He always walks up the road, across Oxford Street, then takes a turn round Cavendish Square and home again. On his return, he calls in at my consulting room to examine the books, gives me 5 and 3 pence for every guinea I've earned, and carries the rest off to a strong box upstairs. And I may say he's never had any cause to regret his speculation. From the first, it's been a success. Everything was going smoothly, until one evening. It was a few weeks ago. September the 13th, to be exact.
Dr. Trevelyan! Doctor! I must speak to you.
Good heavens! What on earth is the matter?
I've had a little shock. Help me to a chair. I must sit down.
But of course, of course. Why, man, you're as white as a sheet. You look as if you'd seen a ghost.
It's worse than that. I've just read something in the evening paper.
Oh? Show me.
No. I don't have it with me. I threw it away as soon as I'd read it.
What was it that upset you so much?
An item about burglary. Committed last night. Right here in the West End. Villains. A lot of them. They broke into a private house and made off with hundreds, thousands of pounds. Cash, bonds, silverware, jewellery. Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible to think such a thing could happen so close to home. I tell you, I shall take precautions at once. First thing tomorrow, I'll have special bolts fixed to the windows. New safety locks on all the doors.
But why should anyone want to break in here? They couldn't possibly know about your strong box.
The strong box? Aye, the strong box, to be sure. They could have found out about it. These criminals have their ways and means. But if they imagine they're going to break into this house, they're making a big mistake. I'll be too clever for them. You'll see. Oh, yes. Much too clever.
For a week, he continued in a peculiar state of agitation, peeping out of the windows, spying down into the street. He even gave up his daily stroll before dinner. Then, as time passed, he seemed to conquer his fears and renewed his former habits.
And then, of course, something else happened.
Why, yes. How did you know that?
Something must have happened. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here now.
Quite so. But let me try to put things in their proper order. 2 days ago, I received this letter by the first post. I brought it with me to show you.
In this establishment, Dr. Watson reads the letters.
Yes, Mr. Holmes listens. Thank you.
A Russian nobleman, now resident in England, would be glad to avail himself of the professional assistance of Dr. Trevelyan. He has been for some years a victim of cataleptic attacks, upon which it is well known the doctor is an authority. He proposes to call at about 6:15 tomorrow evening, if Dr. Trevelyan will make it convenient to be at home.
And the patient turned up as arranged?
I was in my consulting room at the appointed time when the maid showed him in. An elderly man, grey, thin, almost emaciated. He was accompanied by a young man, tall and well-built, with a dark, fierce appearance, though he helped his elderly companion to a chair with surprising tenderness.
Count Orlovsky and Mr. Stefan Orlovsky.
Thank you, Maria. I will ring if I require anything.
Very good, Doctor.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
There, Papa. Are you quite comfortable?
Yes, yes.
You are not in a draught?
No, thank you, my son. This will do very well.
Forgive me, Doctor. We cannot take any risks. My father has to be careful at all times. We are both extremely glad to make your acquaintance.
I am delighted to meet you.
I trust you will excuse my presence here, Doctor, but my father's health is a matter of the utmost importance to me.
That's very understandable. Perhaps you'd like to remain here during the consultation?
Oh, no, not for the world. It is more painful for me than I can say. If I were to see my father in one of these dreadful seizures, I am convinced I should never survive it. My own nervous system is exceptionally sensitive.
I understand. My waiting room just across the hall is at your disposal.
I am most grateful. I shall be within call if you should need me, Papa.
Yes. Yeah, you are a good boy, Stefan.
Now, sir, as a preliminary, perhaps you would be kind enough to answer a few questions.
Of course. Of course. I will do my best to tell you as much as I can.
We discussed his case history, and I took copious notes. His answers to my questions were frequently very obscure. I attributed this to his limited command of English. Suddenly he ceased to speak. And when I looked up, I was shocked to see him sitting bolt upright, staring at me, his face a complete blank, his jaws shut tight, his whole body completely rigid.
A cataleptic condition?
I was certain of it. My first reaction was one of pity and horror.
But your second, I fancy, was one of professional interest?
Well, yes. I must admit, from a professional point of view, it was very gratifying. Oh. I made notes of his pulse and body temperature, tested the rigidity of his muscles, and examined his reflexes. Mm-hmm. None of these were particularly abnormal. However, in the past, I had obtained good results in similar cases by the use of nitrate of amyl, inhaled in small doses. Mm-hmm. I had some in my basement laboratory, so I went down to fetch it. When I returned a few minutes later, imagine my amazement upon finding the consulting room empty and my patient gone.
And the young man?
I ran to the waiting room. Stefan Orlovsky had also disappeared. The front door was closed, and I asked Maria, the Spanish maidservant, but she'd heard nothing. She's not been with us very long and is not as efficient as I could wish. Anyway, there was no solution to the mystery.
Where was Mr. Blessington during all this?
Out on his evening stroll. He came in soon afterwards, but I said nothing to him about the incident. He's a strange man, and quite honestly, I don't take him into my confidence unless it's unavoidable.
And you haven't seen or heard of the Russians since then?
I certainly didn't expect to. And then, this evening, at exactly the same time, they marched into my consulting room again.
Ah, Doctor, I feel I owe you a great many apologies for my abrupt departure yesterday.
Well, I must admit, I was very much surprised.
The fact is, when I recover from these attacks, my mind is very clouded as to all that has gone before. I woke up in a strange room, or so it seemed, and I found my way out in a dazed condition while you were absent.
As to me, seeing my father pass the waiting room, I assumed that the consultation had come to an end. It was not until we reached home that I realized the true state of affairs.
Well, there's no harm done, though I was a good deal puzzled. But now, if you would kindly step into the waiting room, I shall be happy to continue my interrupted consultation with your father.
Certainly, Doctor. I will see you presently, Papa.
Very well, my son.
For half an hour, we discussed the old gentleman's symptoms. Mm-hmm. And after I prescribed for him, I saw him go off on the arm of his son. Later, when Blessington came in from his constitutional, I heard him go upstairs. And then, almost immediately, he burst into my consulting room like a man possessed.
Where is he? Where has he gone?
I'm sorry. I don't understand you.
The intruder? The burglar?
I can assure you there has been no intruder here, Mr. Blessington.
Oh, yes, there has. A man has been in my rooms. Who went up to my room?
No one. You're making a mistake.
Don't lie to me.
Please, try to control yourself. I'm telling you, nobody has been upstairs.
I'm sorry. I spoke hastily. No doubt you believe you're speaking the truth, but how do you account for the footprints on the stair carpet? Come and see for yourself. There! And there! Do you see? It was raining earlier this afternoon. Someone has left muddy footmarks upon the tiles. And on the stair carpet, too. You see? They continue all the way up to my sitting room.
Could they be your own prints? You were the last person to come in.
For God's sake! Are you blind? Those boots are a good inch and a half longer than mine.
Yes, that's true.
I demand to know who's been here while I was out of the house.
Well, a patient called upon me at 6:15.
Who was it? Did you leave him alone at all?
He's a foreign gentleman, Count Orlovsky. But I was with him all the time he was here. Although, now I come to think of it, he did have a son with him.
His son? And where was he?
In the waiting room, naturally. I can only suppose that during the consultation, the young man must have gone upstairs for some reason.
Oh, God! What am I going to do?
Do you mean to say the young man has stolen something from your apartment?
No, no. Nothing like that. Nothing has been touched. Listen, I need help. You must help me. Do you hear?
Just try to keep calm. If nothing is missing, surely it's not such
a... You don't understand! Nobody understands! In God's name, is there no one who can help me?
It was then he thought of you, Mr. Holmes. I told him he could not possibly trouble such an eminent man, and he broke down and sobbed. He was in such distress. In the end, I had to promise him I would do my best to persuade you to come and investigate this remarkable mystery.
Investigate? But since no crime has been committed...
It's possible that a crime is about to be committed. I fancy that is what terrifies Mr. Blessington.
As I say, he's a very eccentric man. But if you'd only come back with me in the brougham, then you might at least be able to soothe him and perhaps make some sense out of these extraordinary incidents.
Very well. Come, Watson, let us go.
Oh, Dr. Trevelyan, I'm so glad you are here.
Maria, what's the matter?
I saw the carriage drop. I've been so frightened.
There, there. Come in, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson.
Thank you.
Now then, tell me what has happened.
It's Mr. Blessington, Doctor. He's upstairs. But he's very upset. He behaves most strangely.
In what way strangely?
He has a gun.
What? We must go upstairs at once.
Stay where you are!
Good Lord.
I have a pistol. I give you my word that I'll fire if you come any nearer.
Mr. Blessington, this is quite outrageous.
Is that you, Doctor? I'm sorry. In the half-light, I thought for a moment... But those other men with you, who are they?
You asked me to bring Mr. Sherlock Holmes, and I've done so. This is Mr. Holmes and his colleague, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Blessington. I'm sorry that we meet under such disagreeable circumstances.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I am extremely grateful to you. Please come upstairs.
After you, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Watson.
Thank you.
Like an animal at bay, Blessington had retreated to the darkest corner of the landing. Now he relit the gas, and we saw before us a man whose appearance testified to his jangled nerves. Shamefaced, he slipped the pistol back in his pocket and ushered us into his rooms.
Come in, Mr. Holmes. Come in. And Dr. Watson. I must apologize for my discourtesy. I'm I'm very obliged to you for responding so promptly. No man ever needed your advice more than I do.
I hope we can assist you in some way.
Perhaps if you were to begin by giving us all the facts.
The facts are very simple.